So we're going to talk about station joints of objects that have probabilistic extent. So this is joint work with Amber Singh, who was my PhD advisor when I was at UCSB. And I have since moved on to the Broad Institute at MIT. So the reason this is an important question is that many questions in biology turn out to actually be spatial joints when you look at them through your database models. So here are some examples that we have from neuroscience. These are actually microscopy images of your retina. So here on the left side, the green blobs that you see are synaptic terminals from your photoreceptors. The red blobs here are bipolar cells, so they pass the electrical signal out to them. And under certain kind of injuries, these photoreceptors start to retract. They move upwards toward the photoreceptors. And the question is, do these axons from the bipolar cell extend in order to keep contact with them? So that's actually a spatial joint. You're looking for synaptic terminals that are close to axons. Here's another example. These blue flame-like things are Miller cells that are usually down here. But in response to certain injuries, they start to grow in hypertrophy. They grow up through the entire retina, past the photoreceptors. And they seems like they may be reaching for these macrophages here. Sometimes, maybe. Nobody really knows. It has been observed. What they would like to do is to image large portions of the retina and actually do statistical analysis, for which you would need an unbiased automated algorithm. And the third example I have here are horizontal cells. That's one kind of neuron that you have in your retina. You see they have cell bodies, and they have these neurons that extend quite far, and they branch several times. And here you are looking for these junction points, which is where the electrical signal may be transferred from one cell to the other. By the way, I'd be happy to take questions during the talk, at least the short ones, and we can save the longer ones for later. So why are we talking about objects with probabilistic extent? Well, let's take a closer look at these horizontal cells. So here's the cell. It has all these neurites growing out. And you see from this image that the retina is really a big mess of neurites from a bunch of different cells, from this cell and from many cells that are outside the field of view. And it turns out to be very, very hard to segment these cells, which you would need to do in order to do any form of analysis on them. But even though you can't segment them perfectly, you can come up with a probabilistic mask. We've done some work on that earlier. This was in ICDM 2006. Here's the same horizontal cell. Here, the intensity of the image tells you how certain you are that the pixel belongs to the cell. So this pixel up here, which is very black, is one where we're pretty sure that it belongs to the cell. And this pixel here, which is very dim, not very black at all, that is a pixel that has a small probability of belonging to the cell. But it's less likely. So I'm not going to go into how this algorithm works. All that matters is that it gives you the cell as a set of points, and each point has a position, and it has a probability of belonging to the cell. So this then is our model of the cell that we're going to be working with. Our object is really a set of points. Now in this talk, I'm going to mostly talk about this problem at the level of points. Obviously, what you're interested in is to join these objects. But that is, for the most part, an orthogonal concern. So in our paper, what we actually do, we do join objects. But because it's much easier to explain, we'll talk about joining object sets here. So this would be one set of objects that we're going to join with one or many other object sets. Now, this cartoon here is how we're used to thinking about spatial joints. We're used to seeing sets of points. And the query is, find pairs that are within the set distance of each other. Here, for instance, here's a blue point, and it matches these red points. It does not match the other red points. So you have a well-defined set as the answer to your query. Now, all these changes once you introduce the probability.
Now you will have some sets that match very well and some that don't.
For instance, maybe this is the point that has a very high probability of belonging to the red object, and this other point here has a very low probability. Well, they shouldn't be equal members in a set, right? We should have a graded set.
And that changes the entire nature of your question. So your query can now have a range, say that you're interested in all matches that are at least of a certain strength, or more realistically, it can be a topic K query. Say, hey, I'm looking at this image set. Give me the 100 best matches.
So those are the two kinds of queries that we're going to be talking about. We call them threshold probabilistic spatial joins. That's when you look for matches that are at least the threshold tau. And then you have top K probabilistic spatial joins, where you're looking for just the K best matches. So we're going to need a scoring function here. So that's what we'll talk about next. So here we have two points, each of which has a position X and the probability. Now what should our scoring function be like?
Well, it seems natural that the score should depend on the probability of the points belonging to their respective objects. And absent any other information, the easiest way to do that is to look at the joint probability,
which is what we have here. The probability of point A belonging to object A multiplied by the probability of point B belonging to object B.
But since we already have this score function, why don't we go one step further and introduce the distance as well? I mean, after all, you may not have a very clear view of what should be the distance cutoff for your query. So we're going to introduce that also into the score function.
So this is the pack factor that we add, which is an exponential decay for the distance function.
So a distance function similar to this have actually been used in several domains. We did a literature search, and we were quite surprised to see that this has been used both in biogeography, in ecology. You can also find psychology papers that use a very similar distance function.
So now that we have the score function, let's look at our very basic algorithm. So first, we're going to talk about the threshold probabilistic spatial joins, and then we'll go back and look at the probabilistic spatial joins later. The question we're going to ask is, given that we have one point A, a red point A, where in the space does another point have to be in order to yield a match that is at least as strong as the current threshold? So this here is the score function that we just saw, and we require that to be at least the threshold. So we're going to rearrange the score function a little bit, and then we're going to look at this in the space where you have the position on the x-axis and you have the logarithm of the probability on the other axis. And the red point is somewhere on this line, which is x-a. Now it's obvious that if the probability of the point B, which is a blue point, is low enough, then there is no way that you can get a match as strong as the threshold. Even if it's right here, it doesn't matter, the score is not going to be high enough. As you increase the probability of the blue point, you get to the point where you get the score that is exactly the threshold, only if the blue point is exactly where the red point is. And then, if the blue point has even higher probability, it can be a little bit away from the red point. So the area that the blue point can be in order to match the red point, at least to the level of the threshold, turns out to be described by this nice triangle here. So this is good. It means that we have transformed our problem to a geometrical problem. What we need to do now is to find all cases where you have a blue point inside the red triangle. Those are the matches that we're looking for. Let's spend another 30 seconds on this just because it's kind of a core point. You have this very important equivalence here. that the score exceeds the threshold if and only if the blue point is inside the triangle. So now when you have a join between the set of red points and the set of blue points, you're going to have a space with a bunch of red triangles and a bunch of red points. And our task now is to join them up. Find all the blue points that are inside the red triangles. Now at a very high level, what we're going to do in order to solve this is a plane sweep. We're going to have a vertical line, we're going to slide it along the x-axis like this. We're going to have various events corresponding to where the triangles start and stop, where we have points and the midpoints in the triangles. So as we slide our line, we're going to keep a data structure of the current active triangles. And then when we slide and we hit the blue point, we're going to use that data structure in order to find the matching triangles. And the principal problem that we encounter is that if we don't do it right, we end up with quadratic complexity. Now you could just keep, you know, a list of the active triangles and you could search it for every point, but then you're in trouble. If you have n points and n triangles, your complexity is going to be n times n. So we're going to try to get away from that. Well, the first attempt at an efficient solution would be to, instead of look at triangles, look at these lines that form the left and right side of the triangle, and then keep them in sorted order. So you have a red black tree or something like that, and you try to keep them in sorted order. And that makes it easier, right? It means that when you do encounter a point, actually say the point is here, then you can do a search in your tree, you can find the right place, and then you can just move up and enumerate all the edges that you get. And that's okay because those are actual matches. Now the problem here is that in order to keep them sorted, when you get to an intersection point like this, you're going to have to change the order of these lines. There are other algorithms that do that, and that's fine because they're usually interested in the intersection points. In our case, that is just a problem, because in the worst case, you could have order of n squared intersection events, something like this. So let's see if we can improve the worst case performance. Now there is one property of this distance function that actually saves us. So here is the inequality that describes the triangle. And if you rearrange that so that you get equations for the left edge of the triangle and for the right edge of the triangle, they look like this. And one observation to make is that the slope of these lines can only mean two things. It's either negative lambda, which is when you have a downsloping line, or it's positive lambda. Even though we may have many, many triangles, there are only two possible slopes. So the trick we're going to use is that instead of having one tree to store them in, we're going to use two trees. You're going to have one tree for the downsloping lines and another tree for the upsloping lines. Now why is that good? Because we won't have any intersections. All the lines that are in one tree have the same slope, so they never intersect. So where does that take us in terms of complexity? Well, we have to start out by sorting our events. And then we have n plus n events. The time to process each event, if it's the start, middle, end of a triangle, well, that's logarithmic time, sorting it into the trees. And then when we have a point event, we just search the tree, and then we report all the matches, which are the lines that are above it. So in the end, if we assume that we have the same number as of red and blue points, we end up with complexity, which is n log n plus the number of results.
So this is the one-dimensional case. We can extend this to multiple dimensions as well. So this figure is of two dimensions, when you have x and y. And here, for each red point, instead of having just a triangle, you have this inverted pyramid, like this. And then the problem is similar. So this is the two-dimensional analog to the triangles that we had. No, it's not the... Yeah, that's a detail. We work with the L1 distance here, actually. That's an important point, though. It works for the L1 distance. It does not work for the L2 distance. I'm not going to go into the details of how the algorithm works. It's very similar, except that it's harder to illustrate on the slide. Now let's look at the other kind of query, which is the top K query. First of all, we can use the plane sweep algorithm with small adaptations. Basically, we start out with a threshold that is very, very small, and then as you find some matches, you increase the threshold. And the effect of that is actually to shrink the triangles. And there is a neat trick that you can employ in order to do that very cleanly. The downside of that, though, is that it's sensitive to the order in which you find your matches. So this pair of figures is on the x-axis is the time of your search. You start here, and your search progresses. And here is your threshold, which starts out close to zero, and then it increases as you find the good matches. At the same time, you reduce the number of candidate pairs that are left in your dataset. What that means is that if you end up spending a lot of time finding bad matches first, and then later you find the good matches, then you also waste a lot of time processing all these candidate pairs. On the other hand, if you're lucky and find the good matches first, then you have less work to do. So the key to efficiency here is to find some good pairs early. And we have a scheduling algorithm in order to achieve that. So we start out by grouping points into minimum bounding rectangles in this x by log t space. And then we look at pairs of rectangles. Now these points are distributed somehow inside each rectangle. Ideally, we would like to know the distribution of the scores that we would get, because we would like to process next the pair of rectangles that is most likely to give us a good score. And so can we find the distribution of the maximum score between the two? Well, that turns out to be quite difficult. You can do it with sampling, but that takes too much time. However, it turns out that when you add more and more points to these boxes, regardless of what the distribution of points is inside the box, you can show with extreme value distributions that the distribution ends up being very, very left skewed. So the red here is with fewer points, and as you add more points, it becomes more left skewed like this. What that means is that you can look just at the corner points of the box. You can look at this point, you can look at that point, and that gives you an upper bound on the maximum score between points of the boxes. And what this shows is that when you have many points in the boxes, that's a very good approximation. So that's what we end up doing. We group the points into boxes. We look at all pairs of boxes and compute this upper bound, and then we process them in that order. Now, how does that affect our time complexity here? Well, first of all, our sorting cost is reduced by the square of the number of points that you have in the boxes. This is what we had before. This is now reduced by a pruning rate. And in our experiment, the pruning rate is very low, it's like 10 to the minus 10. So it's really limited by the sorting. And then you have a trade-off here, which is the R parameter, which is the number of points per box, which you can tune in order to balance the cost of looking at the boxes with the cost of joining the points that are inside it. So I'm going to just show you some of the experiments. The data set that we used is based on horizontal cell images. One set of 43,000 points, the other one with 52,000 points. And then we increase the size synthetically up to 300 times by copying and shifting these point sets randomly around the space. So we scale our experiments from 10 to the 9 pairs of points up to 10 to the 14 pairs of points. And we compare our technique to two other algorithms. Well, the one is just a nested loop join. The other one is a very simple divide and conquer algorithm.
if you're joining two sets, this red set and this blue set, then you split them recursively in the space until you get boxes that can either be pruned away based on the threshold, or that are small enough that you can just prune the loop joint without it hurting. This is the first experiment. This is for threshold probabilistic special joints. This lonely point up here is for the nested loop joint. You see, this takes something like 15 minutes, even for our smallest data set,
which is why we started looking at other algorithms for this. This is just a point because the next one we ran didn't actually finish a reasonable amount of time.
This blue here is the blind and conquer algorithm. And the green here is the plane sweep algorithm.
Now the actual details about which one is faster. In this case, it turns out that the plane sweep is faster for larger data sets. But that's really a detail. I think the take-home message from this experiment is that we can have this plane sweep algorithm, which has a nice worst-case complexity, and still performs reasonably well on real data. So it doesn't have ridiculous coefficients. It's actually an algorithm that has good worst-time performance and performs well in practice.
This figure is similar to the cartoon that we saw earlier for what happens as you do the top K query. So here on the x-axis we have the elapsed time, and then on the y-axis we have our threshold. So this shows how the threshold develops. The green line here is the plane sweep with no scheduling. See, what's happening is that you end up spending the first 10 seconds finding really bad results until you finally find some better results and the threshold starts going up. And you finish your query at about 20 seconds. So in contrast with the scheduling, you invest a little bit of time sorting pairs of boxes, 2 seconds, and then you're able to find good results almost instantly. So that's why the query finishes faster. Finally, we have scalability results for the top K queries. The red line here is the nested loop joint with scheduling, which is now suddenly almost reasonable. So it shows that even if you don't want to use the plane sweep or divide and conquer algorithm, the scheduling works really well. The green here is the plane sweep just without scheduling. And then the blue and purple curves are for divided conquer with scheduling and the plane sweep with scheduling. You see that they're very similar.
So in conclusion, we have looked at probabilistic spatial joints. I showed you applications within biomedical image analysis. They also have applications in satellite imagery, all the geographical applications. We've seen that they're technically challenging. Looking back at that, we see that the reason is that the score depends on the probabilities of both points. So in fact, you end up solving a spatial joint query and a top K query at the same time.
We have seen efficient algorithms for the threshold probabilistic spatial joints and for the top K spatial joints. We have seen the plane sweep algorithm that has n log n worst time performance, plus the cost of reporting the results. And we've seen the global scheduling algorithm that can find good pairs early and thereby reduce the running time of the top K. So future work includes sufficient algorithms for more than 2 dimensions. We've only tested it up to 2 dimensions because that's what we had data for.
You see, it would probably work for a few more dimensions, but eventually the plane sweep is not going to do well. So that's a question, how do you do that in 5 dimensions? And also, as was pointed out, this only works in multiple dimensions with the L1 distance. How do you do it with L2? That's an open question.
Finally, it would be interesting to compare it experimentally to a recent paper by from Hans-Peter Kriegel's group.
So they take an R-tree approach to this. They take the set of points that in this case would make up the cell, and they cluster it they search the MBRs of those clusters into an R tree. And then they use do a station join on those. So at some point it would be interesting to do a shootout between different algorithms and see which one performs well in absolute terms. We wanted to do it here, but we were not able to get the implementation and data in time to do that, so that will have to happen sometime later. Thank you. You mean for the score function that we're assuming that they're independent?
The probability of points belonging to the object, they are very likely to be correlated with the estimate. On the same line, the number of points are likely to be correlated belonging to the object. So it looks like assuming independence probability.
So you're assuming independence between the points from different objects?
No. Yeah. Within one object, there are multiple points. Two points, if they are on the same line in the image, they should be correlated. Their probability of belonging to that object should be correlated. So, quantitatively correlated.
Yeah, but I think that is something that is orthogonal to what you do here, that we come into how you compute the probabilities in the prior step, where you do the probabilistic segmentation.
Well, those probabilities you get for each point is a marginal probability of each point. So, that would be correlated.
Okay, maybe I don't understand correctly.
Good question. Well, my question is continuing your planes ribbon algorithm. You do it along the x-axis.
Yes.
Is it possible to do it along the other axis?
Yes, you could pick any axis to do it along. The question is, why can you do it along a different axis than the x-axis?
I mean, well, how much does this affect your algorithm efficiency?
So I don't know how much it affects it. We didn't really play with that. You would think that in general, if you have a higher dimensional space where you're doing this, you would be sensitive to that kind of things. I would think that heuristics, like picking a dimension based on the principal component, things like that, would work well in practice. But that's what I meant by that it's unlikely to perform well on very high dimensional data.
Spend the next 15 minutes giving a short. We have time. Okay. Thanks, everyone.